Chapter 13. Don't shoot him.
It's hopeless, said Whedon Scott.
He sat on the step outside of his wooden cabin and stared at Matt, his sled man. Together, they looked at White Fang, who was snarling fiercely on the end of his chain, trying to get at the sled dogs.
It's a wolf, and you can't tame it, announced Whedon.
I'm not so sure, said Matt. He's been tamed already.
How do you know?
Asked Whedon, amazed.
Look at the marks on his chest, explained Matt. They're harness marks.
You're right, said Whedon. He was a sled dog before Beauty Smith got hold of him.
So he could be one again, said Matt.
Whedon looked hopeful for a moment, until White Fang snapped wildly.
I don't think so, said Whedon. We've had him for 2 weeks now, and he's wilder than ever.
Give him a chance, advised Matt. Unchain him for a bit.
Whedon could not believe his ears.
Just make sure you have a club in your hand, said Matt. This dog has seen a club before.
You try it then, said Whedon.
The sled man picked up a club and walked toward the chained animal. As his hand approached White Fang's neck, the wolf crouched and snarled, keeping an eye on the club. Matt undid the chain and stepped back. White Fang could not believe that he was free. For many months, since Gray Beaver had sold him to Beauty Smith for 2 bottles of whiskey, he had been free only when he was fighting other dogs. He was confused and did not know what to do. First, he walked away to the corner of the cabin. Nothing happened. He came back again, stopping a few feet away from the 2 men, watching them.
Will he run away?
Asked Whedon.
We have to take a chance, answered Matt. We can only find out by finding out.
Poor creature, said Whedon, getting up to go into the cabin.
What he wants is some show of human kindness.
He came out with a piece of meat and threw it to White Fang, who immediately sprang away.
Major!
Whedon was shouting at one of his sled dogs, who was running over for the meat. But he was too late, and White Fang sprang on Major. Matt kicked White Fang, then cried out as the wolf bit his leg. A red mark began to show through his thick trousers.
There's only one thing to do, said Whedon,
taking his gun out and checking it for bullets.
Look here, Mr. Scott, said Matt. This dog has had some terrible experiences. Let's give him a bit of time.
But what about Major?
Said Whedon, pointing at the animal that lay dying in a circle of red snow.
Major was asking for trouble, said Matt. He tried to take White Fang's meat. Show me a dog that won't fight for his own meat.
We'd better shoot him, said Whedon. It's kinder. Look at your leg.
And I asked for that, said Matt. Why did I try to kick him? It was his meat. He'd done nothing wrong. This is his first time off the chain. If we can't do anything with him, I promise I'll shoot him myself.
God knows I don't want to kill him, said Whedon, putting his gun away. We'll let him run free and see what kindness can do for him.
Waving away Matt's offer of the club, Whedon went over to White Fang and spoke to him gently. White Fang was waiting for his punishment. He had killed this man's dog and bitten his friend. The man had no club, so he let him come close, and he crouched as the man tried to put his hand on him. White Fang did not want to bite the hand, but he could not stop himself. The man cried out sharply in surprise, holding his torn hand tightly with the other one. Matt ran straight into the cabin. White Fang expected a beating as bad as any Beauty Smith had given him. Matt
returned with a gun.
Stop! Shouted Whedon. What are you doing?
I promised I'd kill him myself, and I will, he said.
No, don't shoot him.
He's had his chance, said Matt.
We've only just started, said Whedon. We can't give up now. That was my mistake. I went too far too quickly.
As soon as he saw the gun, White Fang had run to the corner of the cabin and was snarling at Matt. The two men were amazed at how intelligent this animal was, even knowing what a gun was.
I agree with you, Mr. Scott, said Matt. That dog's too intelligent to kill.
The next day, White Fang was still waiting for his punishment. As Whedon approached, a bandage around his hand, the wolf snarled. But the man was not carrying a gun, a club, or a whip, and he simply sat down. White Fang had no chain or rope around his neck, and he could escape if he needed to, so he decided to wait and see. The longer the man sat quietly without moving, the quieter White Fang's snarl became. The man began to speak, talking to White Fang in a way that nobody had ever spoken to him before. His voice was soft and gentle, and somehow, somewhere, it touched White Fang, and he began to feel more confident. The man went into the cabin and came back with a piece of meat. He held it out. White Fang's ears went up, and he kept his eyes on the man and the meat at the same time, ready to spring away at the first sign of danger. The man held the meat near to White Fang's nose. It smelled okay, but he refused to touch it. It was surely a trick. Meat and punishment usually went together. In the end, the man threw the meat onto the snow at White Fang's feet. He smelled it without taking his eyes off the man. Nothing happened, so he ate it. Still, nothing happened. Now the man was offering him another piece of meat. He ate that one too. This was repeated a number of times, until the man did not throw the meat, but kept it in his hand. It was good meat, and White Fang was hungry. Slowly, he approached the hand until at last he decided to eat the meat that it held. He kept his eyes on the man's eyes, and he put his head forward and his ears back, gently growling as a warning to the man. He took the meat and he ate it. Piece by piece, he ate all the meat, licking his lips and waiting. All the time, the man talked. There was kindness in his voice, something that White Fang had never experienced before. He found that he liked it, and that it filled some big space in his heart. Ah, he had thought so. Now the hand was coming down, descending on his head. The pain was coming. The soft voice continued. Different feelings fought inside White Fang until he felt he could break into pieces. As the hand came nearer, he snarled, but he did not snap or spring away. He crouched and felt the fingers on his fur. No man had ever touched him in kindness, and the feeling of human skin tormented him. The hand went up and down, stroking him. It did not hurt him, and, in fact, it was even quite nice, especially when the man pushed his fingers in behind his ears.
Well, Mr. Scott, that's something, said Matt, coming out of the cabin carrying a pan of dirty water. He's learning to trust you.
The moment his voice broke the silence, White Fang jumped back, snarling wildly at him. But Mr. Scott got up, walked over to where the wolf had run, and began to stroke him again. When Matt spoke again, this time, White Fang did not jump away from the hand.